From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
In the name of all peoples and all nations, I'm now proud to officially declare this General Assembly Hall open for business. Thank you.
That was UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon at the opening Wednesday of the 69th session of the UN General Assembly for general debate among the membership. The meeting took place in a newly renovated facility after a seven-year makeover that included replacement of the gold-leafed background behind the UN emblem that had become caked with tar and nicotine from decades of tobacco smoke, and restoration of the leather desks and chairs to their original form and color with two exceptions. The ashtrays were removed and the desks raised to make them wheelchair accessible. Before handing over the gavel to the Assembly's president, the Secretary General gave a summary of what he called a terrible year. Daniel Dickinson reports.
As the United Nations General Assembly began its annual general debate on Wednesday, the UN Secretary General said it had been a terrible year for the principles enshrined in the organization's charter. Ban Ki-moon told world leaders gathered in New York that this year the horizon of hope had darkened. He noted what he described as unspeakable acts and the deaths of innocent civilians. He said not since the end of the Second World War have there been so many refugees, displaced people and asylum seekers that the UN has had to support. Secretary General Ban called for leadership to bring hope to a world that he said may seem to be falling apart.
It has been a terrible year for the principles enshrined in the United Nations Charter. From barrel bombs to beheadings, from the deliberate starvation of civilians to the assault on hospitals, UN shelters, and aid convoys, human rights and the rule of law are under attack.
The Secretary General said in Iraq and Syria there have been what he called new depths of barbarity and a devastating spillover across the region.
The General Assembly is the main deliberative, policymaking, and representative organ of the UN. Each of the UN's 193 member nations has one vote. It provides a unique forum for multilateral discussion of the full spectrum of international issues covered by the UN Charter. It also plays a significant role in the process of setting standards and codification of international law. The Assembly meets in regular session intensively from September to December each year, and thereafter as required. Decisions on important questions, such as peace and security, admission of new members, and budgetary matters, require a two-thirds majority vote. Decisions on other questions are by simple majority. It was Africa's turn this year to select the Assembly President, and the African Union Executive Council unanimously chose the Foreign Minister of Uganda, Sam Kahamba Kutesa, to be their candidate. He opened Wednesday's session.
Excellencies, heads of state and government, Mr. Secretary General, honorable ministers, distinguished delegates, ladies and gentlemen, I am honored and humbled by the trust and confidence you have bestowed on me and my country, Uganda, to serve as president of this August General Assembly during its 69th session. My thanks go to my president who nominated me, my continent which endorsed me, and to you all, the General Assembly, that elected me by acclamation. Your Excellencies, this session and the coming year will be momentous. We will commemorate the 70th anniversary of the United Nations. We also commemorate 20 years since the groundbreaking Beijing Conference on Women. We will reach the targeted date for the achievement of Millennium Development Goals, and we will formulate and adopt the post-2015 development agenda. When the United Nations was founded nearly 69 years ago, it was an untested vision, preoccupied with efforts to heal the world that had been ravaged by the scourge of war. It comprised only 51 countries, a tiny fraction of the 193 member states that make up its membership today. It is therefore befitting that the Charter, as the Charter stresses, the determination by peoples of the United Nations to reaffirm their faith in human and fundamental human rights, in the dignity and worth of a human person, in the equal rights of men and women, of nations large and small, and promote social progress and better standards of life in larger freedom. We have collectively achieved a lot as member states over the last seven decades in maintaining peace and security, promoting human rights, and fostering development. But a lot more remains to be done.
President Kutesa spoke in some detail about the need to do more for the people in the developing world. Jocelyn Sambira has this report.
World leaders have been urged to intensify efforts to accelerate progress to achieve the Millennium Development Goals, MDGs, set in 2000 to improve people's lives around the world. The appeal came from the president of the 69th session of the UN General Assembly, Sam Kutesa, at the start of the annual general debate on Wednesday. Mr. Kutesa said that since the adoption of the MDGs nearly 15 years ago, the lives of millions of people worldwide have changed.
We must continue to build on the foundation laid by the MDGs, with nearly 1 billion people lifted out of extreme poverty, increased universal primary education, maternal and infant mortality reduction by nearly 50%, and increased access to clean drinking water, to mention some of the significant achievements. Yet, a lot remains to be done. The sanitation targets lag far behind. Too many women still die in labor, and inequities within and among countries remain very high.
Mr. Kutesa pointed out that in the coming months, the UN General Assembly will be preoccupied with formulating a new agenda to eradicate poverty and hunger. He said the agenda should promote sustained and inclusive economic growth, safeguard the future of the planet, and lead to the achievement of sustainable development. Jocelyn Sambira, United Nations.
U.S. President Barack Obama was at the UN for a second day. On Tuesday, he spoke about the need to cut greenhouse gas emissions. Daniel Dickinson filed this report.
The United States president has urged every country to cut greenhouse gas emissions in a bid to halt climate change. President Barack Obama told the climate summit at UN headquarters on Tuesday that the United States is committed to building a climate-resilient infrastructure. He said the nations that contribute the least in harmful carbon emissions often stand to lose most. President Obama called on all countries to work together.
We recognize our role in creating this problem. We embrace our responsibility to combat it. We will do our part, and we will help developing nations do theirs. But we can only succeed in combating climate change if we are joined in this effort by every nation, developed and developing alike. Nobody gets a pass.
President Obama said that he was directing the country's federal agencies to begin factoring climate resilience into international development programs and investments. He also announced a new effort to deploy what he called the unique scientific and technological capabilities of the United States to help vulnerable nations to prepare for weather-related disasters and better plan for long-term threats like steadily rising seas. Daniel Dickinson, United Nations.
At the General Assembly Wednesday morning, President Obama focused on ISIL and terrorism in general.
The terrorist group known as ISIL must be degraded and ultimately destroyed. This group has terrorized all who they come across in Iraq and Syria. Mothers, sisters, daughters have been subjected to rape as a weapon of war. Innocent children have been gunned down. Bodies have been dumped in mass graves. Religious minorities have been starved to death in the most horrific crimes imaginable. Innocent human beings have been beheaded, with videos of the atrocity distributed to shock the conscience of the world. No God condones this terror. No grievance justifies these actions. There can be no reasoning, no negotiation with this brand of evil. The only language understood by killers like this is the language of force. So the United States of America will work with a broad coalition to dismantle this network of death.
He also spoke in vague terms about the need to renew the international system.
We come together as United Nations with a choice to make. We can renew the international system that has enabled so much progress, or we can allow ourselves to be pulled back by an undertow of instability. We can reaffirm our collective responsibility to confront global problems, or be swamped by more and more outbreaks of instability. And for America, the choice is clear. We choose hope over fear. We see the future not as something out of our control, but as something we can shape for the better through concerted and collective effort.
Among Wednesday's speakers were members of the European Union, including the UK, Denmark, Estonia, Finland, and Spain, as well as members of the African Union, including Uganda, Rwanda, Kenya, Nigeria, and South Africa, the latter of which is also a member of the BRICS countries, along with Brazil, Russia, India, and China. Brazil's president, Dilma Rousseff, also spoke. She faces a tough election next month, which may determine not only the direction of her country, but the fate of the ongoing political and economic integration of Latin America. She addressed a number of those issues before the assembly Wednesday.
Ambassador Sam Kutesa, president of the 69th United Nations General Assembly, Mr. Ban Ki-moon, Secretary General of the United Nations Organization, Your Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, heads of state and heads of government, ladies and gentlemen, for Brazil, as the country that has the honor and the privilege to open this debate, it is a great pleasure to see at the presidency of this General Assembly a son of Africa. We Brazilians are attached to the African continent through historic, cultural, and friendship ties. Africa's contribution was and remains decisive to the very makeup of my country's national identity. Mr. President, I open this general debate just a few days before elections are held in Brazil, elections that will choose the president of the republic, state governors, and a substantial part of our legislative branch of power. The upcoming elections are the celebration of a democracy that we achieved almost 30 years following two decades of dictatorial government. With democracy, we have also made much progress by way of economic stabilization. In the past 12 years, in particular, we have added yet another gain to these achievements. I'm talking particularly about the consolidation of an inclusive society based on equal opportunities. The major transformation to which we have been committed has produced a modern economy and a more egalitarian society. At the same time, it has required strong and active involvement of our people, respect to human rights, and a sustainable vision for our development. Lastly, it has also required action on the global scene based on the multilateral approach, respect to international law, the quest for peace, and the practice of solidarity. Mr. President, a few days ago, the FAO indicated that Brazil has come out of the so-called hunger map. That change is the result of an economic policy that has created 21 million jobs and has appreciated the value of basic wage by increasing its purchasing power by 71% in the past 12 years, as a result of which we have reduced inequality. 36 million Brazilians have been uplifted from extreme poverty since 2003, 22 million of which under my administration alone. Social and income transfer policies have also contributed to that result. Policies that were brought together as part of the Brazil Free of Extreme Poverty Plan. On the healthcare front, we have succeeded in achieving the goal of reducing child mortality before the deadline set by the MDGs. We have also made access to fundamental, primary, and middle education universally available. We have pursued the same objective in secondary education. We stand committed to improving the quality of education by enhancing curricular contents and appreciating the role and the value of the teaching profession. Vocational education has made headway as hundreds of new schools have been opened, together with the training and development of 8 million young people in the past 4 years. There has been an unprecedented expansion of higher education. New public universities and more than 3 million students have been granted scholarships and funding, which in turn have ensured access to private universities. Affirmative actions have enabled massive access by poor Black and Indigenous students to university programs. Furthermore, the challenges involved in building a knowledge society have brought about our Science Without Borders program, a program through which more than 100,000 undergraduate, graduate, and postgraduate students are sent to the world's finest universities. By means of a presidential initiative, Congress in Brazil passed a law that allocates to education 75% of royalties and 50% of the reserve fund of the pre-salt oil deposits, plus another 25% to healthcare. We will change finite, non-renewable resources such as oil and gas into a permanent asset, i.e., education, scientific and technological knowledge, and innovation. This, as such, will be our passport to the future. Mr. President, we have not neglected fiscal soundness and monetary stability, and we have protected Brazil in view of external volatility. Accordingly, we have been able to provide responses to the wide-ranging world economic crisis triggered in 2008, a crisis involving the international financial system that started following the collapse of the Lehman Brothers Bank, which later became, in many countries, a sovereign debt crisis. We have withstood its worst consequences: unemployment, wage reduction, loss of social rights, and investments that were ground to a halt. We then continued to distribute income by stimulating growth and employment while upholding investments in infrastructure. Brazil left the 13th position in the overall ranking to become the world's seventh largest economy. Per capita income has more than tripled. Inequality has fallen sharply. If in 2002 more than half of Brazilians were either poor or very poor, today, by contrast, 3 out of every 4 Brazilians are part and parcel of the middle class and the upper classes in society. During the crisis, while worldwide hundreds of millions of workers were losing their jobs, Brazil created 12 million formal job posts. Moreover, we have consolidated ourselves as one of the main destinations of foreign investments. We have resumed infrastructure investments through a strong partnership with the private sector. All of these gains and achievements are being materialized in an environment of fiscal soundness. We have reduced our net debt to GDP ratio from about 60 to 35% of the GDP. The foreign, or the gross foreign debt vis-a-vis the GDP, fell from 42% down to 14%. International reserves increased tenfold, and we have therefore become international creditors. The yearly inflation rate has also been within the boundaries of the minimum and maximum variation range set under the inflation targeting system in effect in Brazil. Mr. President, although we have managed to withstand the most harmful consequences of the global crisis, the fact is that it has nevertheless affected us, and more acutely so, in the past few years. This is due to the fact that in all regions of the world there remains lingering and considerable economic difficulty which have had a negative impact on our growth pattern. May I reiterate what I said here at the opening of the general debate? It is essential and urgent to resume momentum of the global economy. It should work as a driver of investments and a tool to foster international trade and reduce inequalities among countries, and not as a factor that will ultimately slow down the pace of economic development and income distribution through society at large. As regards international trade, all parties must be committed to a work program aimed at successfully completing the Doha round. It is also imperative, Mr. President, to put an end to the current mismatch between the increasing importance of developing countries in the world's economy and their insufficient participation in the decision-making processes of international financial institutions such as the IMF and the World Bank. The delay in expanding the voting powers of developing countries in these institutions is unacceptable. The risk facing these institutions is that they may ultimately lose their legitimacy and efficiency. Mr. President, Brazil was utterly pleased to host the 6th BRICS summit meeting. We received the leaders of China, India, Russia, and South Africa in a most fraternal and fruitful meeting, which pointed clearly to an important future outlook. On the occasion, we signed agreements establishing the new development bank and the contingent reserve agreement. The new bank will cater to the infrastructure financing needs of the BRICS and those of developing countries. The contingent reserve agreement, in turn, will provide protection to BRICS countries from financial volatility. Each instrument will involve a capital injection of $100 billion. Mr. President, the current generation of world leaders, i.e. our generation, has also been called upon to overcome substantial challenges involving the topics of peace, collective security, and the environment. We have nevertheless been unable to solve old disputes and to prevent new threats. The use of force cannot possibly eliminate the deep-seated causes of conflicts. That is made plain and clear in the lingering and unsolved Palestinian issue. It is also made clear in the systematic massacre of the Syrian people, in the tragic nationwide fragmentation of Iraq, as well as in the serious state of insecurity in Libya, in the conflicts in the Sahel, as well as in the clashes in Ukraine. In every military intervention, we have not moved towards peace. Instead, we have witnessed increasingly hard-fought conflicts. There has been a tragic multiplication in the number of civilian victims and countless cases of humanitarian plight. We cannot accept that these barbaric expressions of lawlessness increase and thus violate our ethical, moral, and civilizational values. Neither can we remain indifferent to the spread of the Ebola virus in Western Africa. Accordingly, we support the proposal put forth by the Secretary General to establish the United Nations mission for Ebola emergency response. Brazil will be utterly in favor of that mission. Mr. President, the United Nations Security Council has had some difficulty in promoting peaceful resolution of these conflicts. And to overcome such a stalemate, a true reform of the Security Council will be required, a process which has been dragging on for quite some time. The 70th anniversary of the United Nations in 2015 appears to be a conducive occasion for achieving the progress that the situation currently calls for. I am quite certain that we all understand the serious risks arising from a paralysis and inaction at the United Nations Security Council. A more representative and a more legitimate Security Council will also be more effective. I wish to underscore that we cannot possibly remain indifferent to the Israeli-Palestinian crisis, especially after the dramatic events in Gaza. We condemn the disproportionate use of force, which has strongly victimized the civilian population, particularly women and children. This conflict should be properly solved and not precariously managed, as has been the case. Effective negotiations between the parties must ultimately lead to a two-state solution, Palestine and Israel, living side by side and in security within internationally recognized borders. Amidst so many conflict situations, the Caribbean and Latin America seek to face up to the main problem that has marked us for centuries on end. I'm talking about social inequality. Democratic roots have become stronger, and the quest for a more just, more inclusive, and sustainable growth has been increasingly a strong trend. Through UNASUR, MERCOSUR, and CELAC, integration efforts have made tremendous headway. Mr. President, climate change is one of the key challenges of today's world. To overcome the challenge, we need a sense of urgency, political courage, and a keen understanding that each person will have to contribute according to the principles of equity and common but differentiated responsibilities. The climate summit, which was very timely convened by the Secretary General, further strengthens the negotiation at the level of the framework agreement. The Brazilian government will endeavor to ensure that the result of the negotiations will lead to a new, balanced, fair, and effective agreement. Brazil has done its part to face up to the challenge of climate change. In 2009, during the Copenhagen conference, we undertook to voluntarily reduce our emissions between 36 and 39% as forecast for 2020. Between 2010 and 2030, we avoided releasing into the atmosphere, on average, 650 million tons of carbon dioxide every year. In all of these years, we have achieved the four lowest deforestation rates in our history. In the past 10 years, we have reduced deforestation by 79%, without, however, giving up our agenda of economic development and social inclusion. We have therefore shown that, yes, it is possible to grow, to include, to conserve, and to protect. Such an achievement is the result of firm and continuous commitment of the government, society, and of public and private stakeholders. We do hope that developed countries, countries that have not only a legal but also a political and moral obligation to lead by example, we hope that developed countries will show in an unmistakable and concrete fashion their commitment to tackle this evil that afflicts us all. During the Rio Plus 20 conference, we were very pleased to set a new agenda, one that is based on sustainable development goals, or SDGs, that apply to both developed and developing countries. It will be critical to clearly determine the means of implementation that will live up to the magnitude of the challenges that we are committed to overcome. We must be ambitious on matters such as financing, cooperation, national capacity building efforts, and technology transfer, particularly to the benefit of least developed countries. In that context, may I highlight the need to establish a mechanism that will prove conducive to properly develop, transfer, and disseminate clean and environmentally sustainable technologies. Mr. President, in addition to sustainable development and peace, international order that we seek to build is ultimately anchored on values. They include particularly efforts to fight all forms of discrimination and exclusion. Mr. President, member states and the United Nations have before them today challenges of a significant order of magnitude, and they should, as such, be the priorities of this session of the General Assembly. 2015 emerges as a true turning point in the horizon. I am quite certain that we will not shy away from fulfilling, with a sense of courage and insightfulness, our high responsibilities in building an international order that is firmly grounded on the promotion of peace, on sustainable development, on the reduction of poverty and of inequality. Brazil stands ready and is fully determined to give her contribution.
The UN General Assembly members' debate will continue until next Tuesday, and we'll bring you more of its highlights over the coming days. And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.